When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Playlist Podcast, a weekly discussion of films and TV. I'm your host, Charles Barfield, managing editor of the Playlist. And as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Mike D'Angelo and Brian Farver. Are you two ready to record a podcast, release a terrible version of the podcast, come back, make it twice as long, add a few F-bombs, and then let fans fawn over it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, do we get a Rotten Tomatoes score?
Well, it'll be middling. It'll be about 65, okay. All right. I'm guessing.
Well, right now it's about 77.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Will this be 4 hours long?
You know, I was thinking maybe we could go for eight just to really out-Snyder, but no, we're going to keep this as close to one as possible, but we'll see.
Keep it concise.
Yeah. This was my ridiculous long tease for the subject of this podcast, which is our deep dive into Zack Snyder's Justice League. After years of social media campaigns, relentless teases on Vero, and roughly $70 million, Zack Snyder has officially finished Justice League. Affectionately called the Snyder Cut, this re-edit of Justice League has been the subject of intense debate and criticism for nearly 4 years now. And if we time this podcast release correctly, the new Justice League, Zack Snyder's version, will finally be available to stream in its 4-hour and 2-minute glory on HBO Max. But before we talk about Zack Snyder, Joss Whedon, Superman's suit, and Aquaman's abs, I got to tell you that the Playlist Podcast is part of the Playlist Podcast Network, which includes Be Real, The Fourth Wall, Deep Focus, and more. And if you want to find us, you can check your podcast app of choice, whether that's Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Spotify, Anchor, Stitcher, anywhere else you find your favorite shows. So, gentlemen, this is going to be a fun discussion, right?
Sure is.
Good.
Brian's just like, silence.
Yeah, it's going to be about as fun as the experience I had watching the film.
And that, which was a blast. But before we dive into Brian's very interesting thoughts, apparently, allow me to attempt to succinctly recap the whole drama that led to Zack Snyder coming back to finish a 2017 superhero team-up film that bombed at the box office. So, folks, sit down, grab a snack. It's story time. Back in 2017, Zack Snyder was finishing work on Justice League, the DCEU's version of the Avengers that was going to wrap up his story that he began in 2013's Man of Steel and continued a couple years later in Batman vs. Superman. However, when Warner Brothers saw his version of the film, apparently the studio was a bit concerned about the tone, especially after the perceived critical failure of Batman vs. Superman, and they wanted some major changes. They wanted the film to be cut down to 2 hours. And the studio also wanted to bring in Joss Whedon to write some new scenes, to add a little humor, and generally lighten up this dark superhero tale.
To avenge it, perhaps?
Oh, Lord.
Ooh.
Oh.
Nice.
Yes.
Oh.
So, Joss Whedon comes in. Zack Snyder is playing ball at first, but eventually, according to interviews he's been giving recently, he was still reeling from the loss of his daughter, who died by suicide, and he didn't have the energy to fight the studio to preserve his vision. So he left the film unfinished, and Whedon was then handed tens of millions of dollars to reshoot some new scenes, re-edit Snyder's version, and turn in a 2-hour Justice League. That film was eventually released in theaters in 2017 in November and disappointed just about everyone and became the butt of jokes thanks in no small part to Superman's terrible mouth CGI. We all remember the mustache gate, as it was affectionately called. From there, hashtag release the Snyder Cut was launched by fans. This is a social media campaign that had hoped to convince Warner Brothers to eventually release the cut Snyder originally put together and that he had been teasing on social media. And years later, thanks to the creation of HBO Max, Warner Brothers did one better, not only releasing the Snyder cut, but also allowing Zack Snyder to spend $70 million to completely finish his original vision. Now, fans are being presented with a 4-hour magnum opus that is 100% uncut, unadulterated Zack Snyder. That's it.
Yeah.
That is these huge 4-hour saga or 4-year saga and a 4-hour saga.
All right, let's wrap it up.
Yeah, yeah. So thanks for joining us. Needless to say, there's a lot to unpack with this movie. So first, to get the ball rolling, I want to get your overall spoiler-free thoughts on the way that Zack Snyder's Justice League turned out before we hop into the nitty-gritty. So, Mike.
Yes.
Let us know your overall thoughts on Zack Snyder's Justice League.
I mean, I have a lot of competing thoughts. There are things that I really liked about it. There are things that I really didn't like about it. There are things that I was just so-so about. Overall, I land pretty much, you know, it's a thing that I'm glad it exists just because it's a very unique superhero film. Any way you slice it, this is a very unique and Zack Snyder experience. So people who hate Zack Snyder are going to obviously cringe their balls off here, but for me, I enjoy Man of Steel. I enjoy Batman v Superman, the Ultimate Cut. So I was probably more out of all of us likely to at least somewhat enjoy this movie. And I did. I thought it was a lot more competent than the version we got in 2017. It doesn't feel like a Frankenstein studio mandated version. Things make more sense. It looks better. Steppenwolf by far is better in this movie. So it is more coherent than the theatrical cut, but it also is super long-winded. There's a large amount of like magical superhero logic. There's the unnecessary shoehorning in of characters that don't get enough screen time in a 4-hour movie. There's the overall arc of the theatrical movie is still there. So if you're expecting a movie where, you know, it's not just this heroes are going to get together to squash the bad guy thing. I mean, that's basically what it is. The 2-hour version was a kind of awful paint by numbers version of that. But this one is kind of the other end of that, where it's how much is too much. And I think by hour 3, you know how much is too much. And it should have been like maximum. This movie should have been like 3 hours, and you could have easily cut it down to that with all the indulgent long takes or establishing shots or scenes that just were completely unnecessary, characters that didn't need to be there, stuff like that. And then, you know, there's the other things that really, really bothered me that we'll go into further when it comes to spoilers and stuff like that. But I will say the thing that kind of makes me furious as a viewer with this one is the aspect ratio that he chose to release it in.
Do you know the story of the aspect ratio?
I know the story that it's the IMAX aspect ratio.
Can I briefly just recap this for listeners who may not know? So one of the things when you watch this movie that you're immediately going to be struck by is the fact that it looks like it was 4:3, but it's not actually 4:3 box ratio. It is the quote unquote IMAX ratio, which looks square. So you're not going to have the black bars on the top and bottom. They're going to be on the left and the right. And the reason being is when Zack Snyder was filming Justice League, he was not happy with the fact that IMAX cameras don't record sound. And he wanted to record the entire movie in IMAX ratio. So what he did is he used regular cameras, or, you know, the fancy cameras that weren't IMAX, but filmed in that ratio so that the entire movie could look that way. So when he is now given carte blanche to do whatever he wants, he's like, well, I'm giving you the IMAX ratio. Because as he said in an interview, which I pulled up here, this is a quote, superheroes tend to be as figures. They tend to be less horizontal. So there you go.
Wow.
For me, it's just kind of a infuriating, puzzling, like, why on earth would you release a movie that's only going to streaming in IMAX ratio when everybody has widescreen TVs? Only people are going to be streaming this. There's going to be a few IMAX screenings, but by and large, this is going to be, you know, people looking on their TVs. The best way I can say to watch it, I've watched it in a couple different formats, is probably on your iPad, because you can stretch it out and it fits fits perfectly to your iPad screen. So if you're just watching it alone, honestly, I'd recommend getting a good pair of headphones, throwing it on your chest or whatever, and just watching it on that if you have a good iPad, because it's kind of a waste of TV.
Okay. A waste of TV. Mike D'Angelo Playlist Podcast.
That's going to be taken the wrong way, but you know what I mean.
Well, I love taking things out of context. Clickbait is the way to go. Brian, let's go to you. Overall thoughts, spoiler free. Before the podcast, you said you're coming in hot, so let's hear it.
Mike, you raised a couple of good points in that, this is a more coherent film than what we saw 4 years ago. You know, I was about to say there's things about this movie that do work. But when I say that, I'm mainly referring to the cameras that were used to capture the images that we see on screen, which is usually my criteria when I'm trying to evaluate a movie and I am wondering if it's bad. Like in this case, well, no, the editors clearly knew how to edit frames of film together.
So what you're saying is they instead of making a still picture, they created a moving picture.
Exactly. Exactly.
We could shorten it and call it a movie,
or we could call it a talkie if that's what we want to really get down to brass tacks.
Yes.
So this is a talkie. Okay.
Yes. Continue. Yes. And that unfortunately is about the only praise I can give this film, because really I had a very dreadful experience watching this. There are so many things that go so horribly, horribly wrong to the point where I don't like feeling as bored as I was. And it became eventually this movie that I realized, but by the time we hit hour three or hour four, that I was doing other things and I was still watching the movie and, you know, paying some attention, but I could very easily, you know, start doing something else and I won't have missed anything. Yeah, Mike, there are scenes that do not belong reinserted back into this film. The flow that exists is, I guess, somewhat coherent, but also just very, very useless and meandering. It's almost like someone is driving a car and they're lost and they have no GPS. It just, I didn't get it. There were so many things I just did not understand. And it's very weird because, you know, were this the movie that was released 4 years ago, that would have been the first time that we're seeing The Flash and Aquaman and all these characters. And it seems like some of these people, they almost seem bored, like doing this movie, which is their first appearance in the DCEU. That's not a good thing. Like you'd think that, you know, these people would be feeling that 5 or 6 movies in, but no,
you're putting emotions in these people's mouths, metaphorically speaking.
No, but also Zack Snyder literally did not put emotions in their dialogue. So
that's true.
Continue, Brian. I'm here for you, bud.
No, thanks. It even goes down to, maybe we'll get into it more, but even the score, which itself has kind of a fascinating story with the original composer and then replaced by Danny Elfman, then bringing him back. I'm a movie score guy, and that can really, in some cases, make or break a film, Alita Battle Angel. But
man. Random shot at James Cameron.
Okay. Yeah, and Junkie XL. And the movie is awash in a mess of subpar CGI, a lot of noise that some might consider music, and actors who, from my impression, don't seem to even want to be there. So there we have it. We'll get more into that later.
We will. And just so before I get into my thoughts, just so listeners know, we are going to go full spoiler. So if you're waiting for us to break down all these little quibbles, we're going to get into it. Trust me. But before we do that, my spoiler free thoughts are, well, actually, I'll preface this by saying going into it, my dislike of Man of Steel and Batman v Superman is well known to you too.
Yes.
I am not a fan. I'm a huge, huge, huge comic book nerd. And I don't think that, I'll just say this, my idea of who Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, all of those characters are not the same ideas that Zack Snyder shares. So fundamentally, when it comes down to it, we just have this disagreement on what these characters should do and how they should act. That said, I can go into that understanding that this is his vision, his idea, blah, 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 blah. Man of Steel, I did not like that movie. I thought it was not a good Superman movie. Batman versus Superman, did not like that movie, did not like what he did with Batman, and then, of course, Superman. And this one, though, I think, surprisingly, this might be, you know, faint praise, but might be his best of the three. and that's not saying a lot. It's a low bar.
Put that on the box or poster or advertisement or whatever.
Yeah. This Justice League is not good. I'll say that. But it might be his best attempt at a superhero movie that I've seen. And yes, I'm including Watchmen in that. Did not like his Watchmen either.
Like that too. Yeah.
No. So the things we'll start with the few things I liked about this movie. A, I do like that it is beautifully shot for 50% of the movie. There are moments where I was genuinely wowed by some of the visuals. The actors, some do really well. Gal Gadot, always awesome as Wonder Woman. I actually enjoy what Ben Affleck does as Batman. I don't necessarily like what Batman does, but I think Ben Affleck's not a bad Batman. Jeremy Irons is a good Alfred. Henry Cavill, I think, is a fine Superman. But that's probably where my praise ends as far as the acting goes. never been a fan of Jason Momoa's take on Aquaman. Ezra Miller is trying his damnedest to inject just a little bit of humor in this movie. And this is probably the funniest superhero movie that Zack Snyder's done. But again, not a funny movie. And Ray Fisher. Sorry, bud. Oof. Not good. Did not enjoy Ray Fisher and his version of Cyborg at all.
Overall, now, is that because of his acting or is that because of the way he was written?
His acting.
Oh, really? I didn't have an issue with it, but okay.
I'll say this. Probably the biggest difference, and I can see why Ray Fisher has been pounding the Zack Snyder drum for the past 4 years. His character was completely dismantled in Joss Whedon's cut of this movie. And it's clear that Zack Snyder did want Cyborg to kind of be the heart of this movie. Unfortunately, while his story is very fleshed out and arguably is maybe even too fleshed out, I don't think Ray Fisher has the ability to bring anything other than the surface level to that character. But again, we can get into that further when I can discuss more specifics. But overall, I'd probably give this a hard C-. You know, it's whatever. I watched it. I will never watch it again. I can say that pretty much confidently, especially considering I have yet to watch Batman v Superman since I saw it in theaters.
So you haven't even seen the Ultimate.
Why, if I didn't like a two-hour version, would I watch a three-hour version?
You'd at least give it a solid C minus.
No. we're not going to relitigate Batman versus Superman, but I will say the only reason I'm watching the Snyder Cut is this podcast. And if I had my druthers, I definitely would not have wasted my Saturday morning watching this recently.
Oh, you poor baby.
I know. So, any last spoiler-free thoughts before we really get into this?
No, let's get into it.
All right. Stay tuned. Coming back with spoilers.
So begins the end for Darkseid.
So with that all out of the way, let's go down the rabbit hole a bit more. But let's be honest, there's so much to discuss. We have to have some sort of structure just to make it coherent and not just ramble about, you know, stupid stuff like Jason Momoa's abs, which are glorious. I forgot to say that in spoiler free, but Jason Momoa, your trainer, Oscar. Okay, so first, we're going to dive deeper into this film's just as the film, without the history, the drama, the rival cuts, the social media campaign, none of that. We're going to imagine a world where those outside factors didn't exist and we were just shown a four-hour Justice League film. So, Mike, I'm going to start with you. What is the best aspect of this movie? Basically, what did Snyder nail?
I mean, everybody knows Zack Snyder is a visual artist above anything else. So I'd probably put that up there. As far as any specific character, I'd say Batman fares a lot better this time around. But there's also some questionable parts. My favorite superhero in the world is the Flash. And it pains me to say that he is not the best part about this movie. Based on one specific scene. Yeah, I mean, what's the best
part? Come on,
you
like this movie. Tell me something you liked, man.
It's a unique experience. I mean, it's what do you mean unique how? It is a four-hour version of a superhero team-up movie. So yes, it's a lot. Yes, it's too much. But there's nothing else like it. And it's very particular in the way it is executed. Whether that turns you off is totally on personal preference. But yeah, it's a unique, special experience.
Okay, Brian, I'm going to challenge you. Tell me your favorite thing about this movie. And if you say the end, you're fired. You got to give me something. Yeah, I know. You got to give me something.
You know, you were touching on some characters there, Mike, and I guess I'm going to say that Gal Gadot is the best. She seems to really inhabit that character well, but she stands out in a sea of mediocrity.
I don't know what you guys are seeing with this whole Gal Gadot is the best part of the movie thing.
I didn't say she was the best part.
Honestly, I don't know. I think she's the best, but at the same time, I go back to what I said, that even she seems...
feel like she was the character that was most shortchanged as far as anything goes.
And I can't disagree with that either. I mean,
but he liked her best.
I guess I liked her best. I don't know. I mean,
less stuff to hate. Okay.
You know what? There is one particular moment that I actually really did love that is not special to this cut. It's when we saw it in the first version. It's a very specific moment, but it's really awesome. And I don't even know if I can get into it right now. But
yes, you can.
Not a spoiler. It's that one little moment that we saw in the first film when evil Superman or Superman's back from the dead and he's fighting everybody off and the Flash is running and everything's slow motion around him and Superman just slowly turns and looks at him.
Yeah.
I love that. Moment. It's a great moment and I still love it even now. And I guess some of the aesthetic about this film, I like the way the stronghold, Steppenwolf stronghold. I can't even say it without almost laughing. Looks a little bit better this time, but that's not
it's red not blue.
It's
okay, Brian. Well, first, my favorite aspect of it was probably the moment with, and this is funny because I just said that Ray Fisher didn't do a good job, but my favorite moment involves Cyborg because they explain his powers in a very interesting way, very visually interesting way. And one of the moments is he uses his powers to watch a woman struggle through her life to feed like her kids and shit. And then he just like with the movement of his hands makes the stack of money in her ATM go up. And I was like, that's pretty cool. I was like, that's pretty cool. I'm there for that. But that's probably the beginning and middle and end of the things where I was like, oh, that's really neat. Most of it was just kind of meh.
That's really funny. That's one of the scenes where I was like, this could get cut.
Well, there you go. Well, and we'll get into it, but Whedon did cut that, and I don't know if that was better for it. So, Brian, I'm going to start with you on this part of it, because I think you have more to talk about. But what do you think was the weakest aspect of this movie?
Yeah, gee whiz. I just feel like the story was, you know, you could say all over the place. You could say non-existent. I don't even know. I want to pick on the story here for those reasons, maybe even pick on the story for it being a story that's not entirely original at all. I don't even know. The story is the weakest part, but I don't know why it's the weakest. I hated it.
Is it because you already knew it?
It's because, yes, I already knew it. And I remember going into these films, all of these films, Man of Steel, Batman v Superman, all of them, and coming out of the Dark Knight trilogy, thinking that this is going to continue. We're going to keep getting these films. And yeah, if it's DC, fine. But the DC films are going to be far more grounded in realism than Marvel. That's fine. Christopher Nolan he pulled it off for at least two of the Dark Knight films. We're going to see more of that with Man of Steel. We're going to see more of that with Batman v Superman. And here, not only is it not even slightly grounded in realism, it's like it's turned up to 11. I don't know. There was nothing like, I mean, you could say that that's kind of in, you know, in keeping with the comic book nature of this. And, you know, this is the characters in a comic book story jumping off the page onto your screen. But in the translation, the person who was carrying that translation tripped and fell, and the translation fell on the stairs and broke into a million pieces that didn't get put back together and got reassembled in this Justice League that we now have to endure. So if I had to pick on one thing, I would say the story sucked.
Yeah. Well, so just to build off that, because I think my thoughts kind of align with you there. I think the story here was pretty weak. Even though we got a lot more of it, it still wasn't that great. Like there was no there was no like moment where I was like, oh, this is the story, or oh, this is the theme, this is what Zack Snyder is trying to say. It was just like an ingredients list. It was like a recipe. It was like, okay, we need to do a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and end it with a big fight, and we're done, superhero movie. And to be fair, it's not a complete story. They would be lying to say it was. This is less of a complete story than something like Infinity War. This was clearly setting up some sort of like trilogy that we'll never ever see. And the film suffers, especially because it's 4 hours. It's 4 hours leading to a pretty lame conclusion in that it's unsatisfying. But I think the weakest aspect of this movie, and I think this hits with just all of Snyder's movies, but is magnified in 4 hours in Justice League, is that he has me in the bag about 50% of the way. And then he loses me because he has these characters which are iconic, and he understands that the big difference between DC characters and Marvel characters are Marvel are the guys that like you hang out with, right? Peter Parker, Steve Rogers, those are the characters, and then they do these outstanding things, but these are flawed individuals. The characters in DC are supposed to be iconic. These are like archetypes. These are like gods almost, right? And Snyder understands that. But he doesn't do anything else other than make them into gods. They're wildly overpowered. They are like Wonder Woman doesn't just punch a guy. She punches a guy through four walls. The Flash doesn't just run fast. He approaches the speed of light. Aquaman, you know, I could go on. Like there's a million examples over 4 hours where you're
all of these are established in the comics. Like all of that stuff that you said is what they are.
But here's where the comics have Snyder beat and will always have Snyder beat.
No, I agree with you on this.
You don't know what I'm going to say. The comics have heart. Mm-hmm. And this movie lacks heart. This movie has the entire like idea of the power level of these characters, and they should be gods. But if you can't relate to any one of them, you're just watching chess pieces move around for 4 hours. And it has I was not worried about the outcome of this movie. I wasn't worried about any sort of like personal relationships. I was not concerned that these guys would fight. And oh my God, I don't want to see Batman and Superman fight. You know, oh, I don't want to see Wonder Woman have an argument with Aquaman or what have you. I didn't care. These were just like so detached from humanity that it was boring. There you go. Mike, I know you're genuinely on the positive for this movie, but name something you did not enjoy.
Yeah, the ending. The very last scene was the giant, like, whoopee cushion question mark fart kind of ending where you're like, why the fuck would you end it on that note? Other movie you've had, you
which
have ended
ending
it,
is that?
That is the Martian Manhunter scene.
Okay. We'll get further into the Martian Manhunter scene and the fact that this movie has multiple endings, but yeah, continue.
No, I don't mind the epilogue. I don't mind the teasing stuff. I didn't even mind the Joker bit. It was a little bit pointless, but it was fun for what it was, and it teased nothing, but you know, hey, whatever. It looked neat, and
but the Martian
Joker said something about the reach around. The Martian Manhunter bit. So it was just this teaser for a movie that was coming up that we already have been teased a million times about. And you don't need another scene with the Martian Manhunter. In fact, I would have cut the Martian Manhunter out of every single piece of this movie.
Yeah.
Because one, the CGI looks bad. And two, he's in pointless scenes. They're literally there just to have either give Lois the tiniest thing to do, which you don't need. She shouldn't even be like a huge part of this movie outside of the part where she needs to be the heart for Superman. But as far as like the reason that was there, it didn't make sense. But anyways, the ending is where I was kind of the most pissed off, because he tends to have these very definitive endings to his movies.
Right.
And this one just was like, and it was just like a stupid, pointless, smelly fart at the end of a conversation.
This is great. To piggyback on this, actually, because I think this film is bookended by two of the worst scenes that Zack Snyder has ever put to film. The opening of this movie shows the ending of Batman versus Superman, but then Superman screams, and that scene lasts for minutes of the screen. There's no dialogue except for Henry Cavill's scream that literally reverberates all over the world. And it is so cringy. It is not effective at all. And then
I get the point it's supposed to have. It should have been like carved way down. But that's this whole movie.
But I will argue that this scene shouldn't exist. And because it's like,
you don't like the fact that he wakes up the mother boxes or whatever it is.
It's so ham-fisted. Okay. It doesn't make sense. Like, okay. Not to get too like push up my glasses and well, actually, but like nerd wise, it doesn't make sense scientifically. Like Superman,
don't get scientific in a superhero movie.
I know, but listen to this. It's just basic logic. Superman screams so loud that it wakes up mother boxes in Themyscira and underwater. Yet, like Joe Schmo in Gotham City didn't hear it. Or are we supposed to assume that literally the entire world heard this man scream for 5 straight minutes?
I like to think that it's the latter.
God, that you can't see right now, but I am eye rolling super hard right now.
Yeah.
But okay, so we mentioned BVS and Man of Steel. So I want to throw it to you guys just quickly. How do you rank this Zack Snyder's Justice League in comparison to those two other movies?
For me, it's third.
Really? What's your ranking?
Man of Steel, BVS, Justice League in order of release.
Yeah. Yeah. Brian.
Yep, exact same. And there's various reasons for that. And there are some things I want to say now that I can look back on everything. If I had to pick, though, yeah, Man of Steel is by far the winner. Okay. Unfortunately.
I would do Justice League, Man of Steel, and BVS. BVS is a stain on humanity. don't like that movie at all. And Man of Steel it's like second by default. This at least didn't have something so egregious that it made me want to like throw something through a window. This one, though, it's long. There are a couple things. we'll get a couple more sections. We'll get to that. But nothing. There was no Superman snapping a neck, and there was no piss jar Lex Luthor moment.
I'm fine with both of those.
Yeah. Ugh, gross. All right. One thing I want to talk about with this movie in particular is I felt like I was crazy. Because watching 4 hours of Zack Snyder, it kind of crystallized a lot of my thoughts because it was like just – it's like watching two Zack Snyder movies back to back with no breaks in between. It's a lot. And so I started to notice these things, right? And one of the things that really stood out is Mike, you mentioned this with Martian Manhunter, is the CGI was really bad. But it wasn't the CGI just in general. Some of it was good. Like Steppenwolf looked pretty good. Some of the stuff looked all right. But it's how Zack Snyder shoots stuff. Like he will do these like crazy zooms on people's faces and then kind of blur the background. And he'll have these like crazy slow-mo fights. There's so much slow-mo, by the way. But he'll have these fights where these people will do these fantastic things. And he does them kind of in like one long CGI take, like camera movement. And every time he did this, it looked fake. It looked green screen. Like it looked like 300. And oh boy, that was really disappointing to me.
Looked like Zack Snyder.
Yeah, well, it was just one of those things where, like, in 2 hours, like 300 got away with it because it's like based on a Frank Miller comic book. It's super stylized, you know, it's all through like sepia tones and weird shit like that. But this just felt like, I don't know, it felt like a fan film. It felt like some guys like on Zoom. Like the backgrounds look so fake half the time that there's this uncanny valley where I just couldn't get over it. I just couldn't see it without seeing all the fakeness. Am I crazy? Like
sometimes yes, sometimes no. I mean, it's a superhero film that likely had to get a lot of VFX finished in a very, very short amount of time. So I was willing to kind of just roll with it. But as far as like if you're comparing the movies, this one is probably the least finished. Yes.
Yeah. And I think like about little things like the interactions or the scenes between Steppenwolf and Darkseid, or the way he said Desaad was like, I don't know why I'm picking on that, but it sounded like he had something in his mouth. I don't know what it was. It just sounded weird.
Brian, I'm just going to bring this up because you might relate to this. Didn't he sound like Unicron from the Transformers animated movie?
That's true. He did actually. Now that I'm thinking about it,
Dark Side.
Oh my God.
It was so Unicron. Anyway, go ahead.
I remember seeing what these characters were going to look like in the trailer and thinking, well, that is at least a little bit better looking than what Whedon gave us. And then seeing these scenes and just realizing, okay, I guess they're slightly better, but not quite there yet. I, you know, you got a little ways to go on this, and that's just that's just a couple of characters. There's so many
sharp, pointy edges on Steppenwolf.
Yeah, exactly.
He was like a walking box cutter.
That cut nothing.
No.
So the thing about Zack Snyder is all his movies are dark for a reason, because things look better when they're with that kind of special effects in the dark.
You're never going to see a daytime fight.
Yes. When Joss Whedon tried to lighten up, you know, the movie that Zack had shot, it didn't look right. It looked strange and out of place.
Well, that's why there's all that red in the final act of the Whedon one.
Exactly.
Because he was trying to do day for night and it just didn't work. Snyder shot it as night. Go ahead.
I liked that. It's funny you say that, because like the scenes, there's one scene in particular I'm just thinking of where the parademons are dragging people out of the water, or maybe it's the Atlanteans, I think.
It's the Atlanteans, yeah.
Yeah. And that's during the day. And I remember thinking, oh, this feels so refreshing right now. Like literally.
But it's like dusk.
It's like, yeah, it is. But even just that little bit was like, oh, this feels like a slightly different, almost better movie. Like, and then a minute later, it's night again. So
yeah, here's the thing.
Interesting.
If you're a villain in the Snyderverse, just do your crimes during the day. Superman has to sleep, man. Okay, so I want to talk about this movie as a standalone film, because this isn't Justice League Part One. This is Justice League. We're likely not going to get more. Just shut up. We're not getting it.
If we got this, anything is possible. Oh, that's all God. I'm saying.
If I hear that one more time.
I'm serious, though.
Warner Brothers,
you really think this would ever happen?
No, I didn't. You can go back and read 4 years of me writing at the playlist. I did not think this was going to happen. I made fun of people who said it was going to happen.
But goddamn miracle.
Here's the thing. Okay. You brought it up. I'm gonna nip this in the bud. Ben Affleck isn't returning as Batman after The Flash. Not gonna happen. Henry Cavill is definitely not coming back as Superman outside of small appearances, because they're moving on. And sure, you can get Jason Momoa, Ezra Miller, and Wonder Woman back, Gal Gadot, but that's about it. Like, there's no amount of money that's gonna bring Justice League Part 2 out.
I don't know. I think Zack Snyder might be able to do it if he wanted to do it.
As an animated movie or comic book, yes. As a live action movie, no.
I disagree. Okay, I think if he was properly motivated and he wanted to do it, all of these actors would do it for him.
No,
is all I'm saying.
Wouldn't.
Yes, they would.
But Warner Brothers is never going to do it
for Zack Snyder.
Warner Brothers isn't going to do it. The only reason Warner Brothers is doing this right now.
Warner Brothers wasn't going to do this.
Well, the only reason
said fucking do it. So they, and if they do that again, it might happen again.
Because they need HBO Max content. Exactly. That's all it is.
What if they need more? That's all I'm saying.
This movie literally, when you add up all the money between the Whedon cuts, the Snyder cut, and the original production costs, this is a $400 million movie.
Yeah,
this is just not going to happen. Regardless, okay. Standalone movie.
I'm going to snip a recording of that. And okay, if it happens, fine. I'm going to shove it in your face.
I will eat literal crow. We'll find a crow and I'll eat a crow and worship at the altar.
Find a VHS copy of The Crow and you are going to eat that motherfucker.
Yeah. I think I might have a VHS copy of The Crow.
Yeah, I do too, actually.
Yeah. So, Mike.
Yeah.
As a standalone movie, mm-hmm. live in my fantasy world. Yes. What do you think of this? Does it succeed at all?
I mean, there is the general storyline of, you know, there's this bad guy that's trying to put together these magical thingies, and we got to beat him before he puts together the magical thingies.
Wait.
His big brother.
We're not talking Infinity War. We're talking – oh, wait.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's a very generic team-up storyline, and that's why it comes across as pretty bland at times. But, you know, there's so much that sets up, you know, additional storytelling. So, I mean, as a solo movie, stand alone, probably not. But do any of the movies stand alone in the Snyderverse? Probably Man of Steel is probably the most.
BVS.
BVS, kind of, barely.
No, it does.
It sets up the...
It's not a good movie, but it definitely tells a complete story with a beginning, middle, and end.
Yeah, this has a beginning, middle, and end as well. But the end is more of a... Huh?
Okay. Yeah. Brian, I'm gonna guess this is a no, but did you like this as a standalone film?
No. No. And here's why. So, you know, we're talking about these the setting up this film does, the tie-ins to its predecessors, but it almost has these moments where it forgets to do that. Like, and I'm gonna refer to the big Flash moment in Batman v Superman. I figured, okay, we're going to see the other end of that here in Zack Snyder's Justice League. All we get is one little moment of Bruce Wayne saying, oh, I remember once seeing the Flash and he was right there. And then later in the film, in the big epilogue, we see the Flash and he appears to resemble the way he does in that little sequence in Batman v Superman. But
that wasn't to come to fruition until part three.
Oh, God. So it's like the film, yeah, it does try to stand on its own, but it also doesn't. And it doesn't understand what it wants to be other than a showcase for Zack Snyder to Snyderfy it. I just remember, I'll never forget Mike messaging us when he started watching this film and his first words were, it's so much more Snydery. I mean, that's perfect. That is the perfect review of all the reviews I've seen. That is nailing it. So, okay. But the, outside of that, no. Standalone wise, no. Not.
So for our next section here, because I think
before we go on, yeah. I do want to say, does it work as a standalone film? Probably less so, but
yeah.
It almost works better if you look at it as a standalone series, like a season one, which is kind of like what he was basically.
Oh, that is actually not a terrible way to look at it.
It is a terrible idea. And here's what I'll tell you.
Season two and three are coming. I'm telling you.
The chapter breaks are so arbitrary, and they don't. If you broke this down, because I know HBO Max is actually going to release this as one movie, but they're going to have like chapter breaks built into it so you can like continue with specific chapters. There's maybe like a thematic reason that's very stretchy, like, okay, sure, but there's really, if you watch those as single episodes, you're not getting episodes of stuff, you're just getting scenes, random scenes.
Like, no, I wouldn't say it was constructed as such,
right?
But so it almost it plays as, like
it's a
that.
Four-hour movie.
Yeah, yes, but the way he is telling a story, it's very serialized.
Is it?
Yeah, you've lost me. Are you including the first two movies?
Yes.
Oh, well, that doesn't make it a standalone movie.
Yeah. Okay. I know, it's Zack Snyder's universe. He expects it, much like Civil War. Well, actually, that's a standalone
movie. Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
But you had to know so much to really understand that movie, is what I'm saying.
Well, of course.
And in this, he expects you to be keeping up, just like Marvel would, but people aren't as invested in this universe, it seems. Well, some are, but it's an expectation that apparently people are very uncomfortable with.
So I think maybe either I didn't explain myself or you misunderstood what I meant by this. The standalone aspect of it, and the reason why I don't think it works, has zero to do with understanding who these characters are and what their motivations are from previous movies. For me, this literal story that we watched, this four-hour Snyder cut, does nothing as far as a complete story. You have Steppenwolf coming to Earth to collect the mother boxes, right?
Mm-hmm.
He comes to Earth, collects the mother boxes. They then, for what, obviously, because it's again setting up future movies, he starts talking about the anti-life equation.
Yeah.
Towards the end, introducing an entire new subplot, an entire new word, a phrase.
Yeah, but Marvel does that all the time.
I don't know to that level. They
absolutely do.
I don't want to compare this to Marvel because that's a bit unfair and people will get really upset. But I think introducing a new plot point 2/3 of the way through a 4-hour movie is just bad storytelling. And yes. I don't think that this is a standalone movie in that sense. And also in the sense that Steppenwolf gets beat up, but the final act is more of like a first act fight in another movie. Like, he gets beat up, but he's going to come back, and he, like, threatens to come back, and, like, Darkseid's like, I'm going to come down there, too, and blah, 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 and it's – anyway.
Yeah.
Does that make more sense?
I feel like it would have felt more complete if Darkseid actually came.
Right.
But because it was all building up, Steppenwolf was just a lackey to this dude, And ultimately, we don't really get much out of Darkseid other than, you know, snippets here and there and a promise that he will come and that shit's going to go down in flash forwards. But yeah, so I mean, there is structure to the movie. He technically has a beginning, middle, and end to it, but he fills it with so much other stuff that I feel like it feels kind of more serialized.
Well, and then there's the fact that, like, Batman goes to wherever Aquaman is in the north, like mm-hmm. Iceland or whatever. Yeah. And he goes there and he visits them, and then he leaves. And then we go back to Iceland for whatever reason because Aquaman's back there again. And then we leave. Like, it feels very scattershot.
Yeah. We're introduced it's to a meandering kind of flow.
Yeah.
It's a very slow, meandering kind of, let's dabble in this area. Now let's go over here. It's never like propulsive superhero, like go, go, go kind of action. Even like the action scenes are just kind of like they flow into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I need to cut us off there because I want to get to this next thing. We got to compare this to the Whedon version because here's it, just quickly. I just want to say that this might be a hot take, but I really, really felt this way that I think Zack Snyder's Justice League gave me a better appreciation for Whedon's film. And I'll explain why. This is a 4-hour film that showed me just how ridiculous it was to assume that a 2-hour version of this movie could ever exist. And given those circumstances and studio pressure, I believe that Joss Whedon did about as good as he could to make a coherent 2-hour version of this mess. What do you guys think?
I'd say that's the best praise you could give it. It is the best he could do with what he had. It's not a good movie, though. The Whedon version.
But the reason I say that is because we were told for years that Zack Snyder had a wildly different movie. And then I think it was revealed that Zack Snyder didn't have a wildly different movie. He just had a wildly longer movie.
Yeah, it's a longer-winded movie version of it.
And with that knowledge, I'm just like, well, Whedon, he added some terrible, cringy jokes and some pretty bad humor. But all the extra scenes that he added, I would argue, were there just to kind of get from point A to point B as quickly as possible.
The only one, I would say one scene that I missed from the Joss Whedon one was the do battle, save one person thing between Batman and the Flash.
Yeah.
I thought that was a really great hero moment.
That was neat. Yep.
That's reminiscent of his Age of Ultron, Hawkeye, Scarlet Witch thing.
Yes.
And that's kind of the problem. I'll tell you this. I told Brian earlier, but I actually rewatched Joss Whedon's version because I watched the Snyder cut.
So you'll watch Joss Whedon's version, but you will not rewatch Batman versus Superman.
No. I watched Snyder Cut, and I was like, wait, this is Joss Whedon's movie, just longer. Maybe I'm crazy. So I went back and I watched Joss Whedon's version, and it was shocking how much of the DNA these movies share.
But even like the cuts or the scenes, the cuts that he chooses.
Oh yeah.
Of the same exact dialogue are worse.
Well, he even more poorly edited. The dialogue, like he'll move scenes in and out, which is it's weird, but regardless, he'll even reuse scenes. There's that Martian Manhunter scene at the very end when he flies away from Bruce Wayne. In the Joss Whedon version, he uses that exact scene in reverse. He uses it to zoom in on the Batcave or whatever.
Does he really?
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of this where he just used everything that he could just in different ways. He obviously recolored the whole thing, but the editing is very it's a lot. But again, I just think that like we were told that this was an official studio mandate, but this is what was wildly reported and speculated by people in Snyder's group that Whedon only used about 25% of Joss Whedon footage or Snyder footage for his cut. I would argue that it's really closer to 60-something%. And that
I think they ended up saying it was an hour recently in one of the interviews. Oof. He used an hour of Zach's footage.
Well, which would be 50% of the movie. I would say it's more than that even. If you basically for the listeners who aren't going to go back and rewatch it, Joss Whedon took a scene, he colored it differently, brightened it up, added a joke at the end, normally in a little tag at the end of a thing with the Flash. And that was about it for about 90%.
But that's the thing. Most of those Flash jokes were Zach's, which surprised the shit out of me.
There's still some.
He definitely added a couple, but the most part, that like
she added the brunch flash thing
was Zach.
Do you remember the brunch joke?
I don't remember the brunch joke.
When Batman goes to Barry Allen. And Barry Allen says, like, oh, I want to be, like, in a team. I don't have many friends. That's a whole Zack Snyder joke, which I thought was, which I was surprised by. And then Whedon continued it by saying, I just don't get people. He's like, what's brunch? You know, and he goes off on brunch for a second. And I was like, oh, God, this is terrible. And that's, unfortunately, Whedon brought a lot of that to it. So, Brian, you didn't really interject much. What do you think? Is there anything that stood out now that we've seen both versions of this movie? Was there something that Whedon did better or worse, or, you know, how do these compare, do you think?
I mean, honestly, there were some, I mean, yeah, Mike, I did like that little dialogue between Batman and the Flash. That was neat. And it was neat. It was jolly, but there were some jokes that I didn't entirely not appreciate, I guess is the best way to put it. I mean, like, I remember when Aquaman says that, what is his line? And when they first meet and he says, I can't remember exactly. I work better or I'm strong when I'm alone or what is it again?
Yeah. He says something in the effect of strong people work better alone.
And which is in the Snyder cut.
Well,
and then Batman's interjects. Yeah.
Yeah. Batman says that's not, or Batman doesn't say anything in the Snyder cut. Batman then in the Whedon cut says that's not the saying. That's the opposite of the saying.
Exactly. Little things like that. It was, I mean, not every joke in the Whedon version stuck the landing, but there were a few that just helped to move things along just a little bit. I'll just never forget. Like, I mean, this obviously we're talking about things that did work in the Whedon version. I'll just never forget whispering to Mike after that very first scene in the Whedon version of Superman talking on that cell phone camera. And we first see what the mustache removal looked like and just leaning over to Mike and saying, so that's the best they could do, huh?
Like, I think a lot of people did that. Yeah.
Yeah. So
I'll say this about the mustache, watching it on my nice 4K TV in 2021. Boy, that mustache looks terrible.
I can just imagine.
Anyway, an HDR for, oh God, that whole opening scene is cringy. Whedon, unfortunately, was like, I did Avengers, so I'm just going to bring Avengers to Justice League. Because the first Avengers has those cutaways to like news camera alert things.
And those don't work in the Avengers either.
I mean, they're okay.
Exactly. They're okay at that.
Yeah. But to open the whole scene that way with Superman was just weird. Mm-hmm. Anyway, not that this movie opens up any better.
No.
I would say it opens better than the little kid. Like, was that even a real little kid or was that someone making a little kid?
It was ADR. It sounded real bad. Yeah, I don't know.
It sounded like a voice actor trying to be a little kid interviewing Superman, and it just drove me fucking insane. So that's why I'd rather watch Superman scream for 5 minutes than whatever the fuck that was.
Okay. I'll acquiesce and say you're right there.
Thank you for acquiescing.
So next, moving away from Whedon back to what Zach turned in, our discussion's got to go into the ending of this movie. So before we get into the actual ending, because I want to explain to people why I absolutely despise calling anything in this movie an ending, because there really isn't a true ending. So I kept marking timestamps throughout my viewing, because I saw at the end of the big Steppenwolf fight, they have this big hero moment where they're all standing on like this mountain or whatever, looking into like the dawn of like, you know, the age of heroes or whatever Snyder has in his head. And I looked at my clock because I'm like, oh, cool, this movie's almost over. And that was 185 minutes of a 242 minute movie. So I still had an hour left. And then the stupid epilogue title thing came up and I was like, what? And then at 190 minutes, so 5 minutes after the epilogue begins, there's another hero shot of Superman ripping open his shirt, revealing the black suit. And that
just sticking with the black suit.
Yeah, which is weird, by the way. Totally
there's
not
a purpose
the
purpose for the black suit in the comics. And he completely ignores it.
He literally walks past the blue suit and looks at the black suit, and he basically says, fucking cool, and puts it on, right? Like,
Oh, I wish he would have said that. Yes, wish he would have said that.
Yeah. With his eyes.
He did. And I just, oh, gross. The black suit, again, in the comics, Mike can correct me if I'm wrong, but it's like a regeneration suit. Like, he wears it to help him, like, you know, come back.
Absorb the sun's rays better, yes.
Yeah. So, and then he dumps it because he knows that that's not the symbol, regardless. At 190 minutes, there's a scene where he opens his shirt and reveals the suit, and he, like, kind of walks towards camera in that famous way that Superman does, and cut. But nope, we still got like 50 minutes left. Then comes the scene that everybody's been talking about for weeks now, this post-apocalyptic
scene. And everybody
will
talk about, yes.
Oh, God. This post, spoiler alert, obviously, is a post-apocalyptic scene with Batman and his new quote-unquote team, which includes Deathstroke, Joker, Jared Leto, Mera, all sorts of fired up Mera, Flash.
They killed Aquaman, yes, okay.
Yeah, Flash and Cyborg, right? So it's Deathstroke, Joker, Mera, Flash, and Cyborg, and Batman.
Yes.
Okay, and
yes.
Batman's wearing his stupid goggles, and he's got, like, his little, like, you know, trench coat on, whatever. Yeah. And so this is famously the only scene that they shot for this movie specifically for the Snyder Cut. And it presents basically, I guess the premise is, this is a world where Lois's death made Superman kind of turn evil and work with Darkseid for some reason.
Well, the anti-life equation is right. What made Superman turn.
But Lois died, and that was kind of the thing, right?
That was what pushed him over the edge, probably. I don't know how it all turned together, really, but that was going to come in part 2 and 3.
Yeah.
Probably part 3.
What really, I think that we hinted at one of the things, I said there were no moments where I wanted to throw something through a TV or a window. There was. I lied. It's Batman turning to Joker and saying, make no mistake, I will fucking kill you.
I will fucking kill you. I thought it was so outrageous that I was enjoying it. But it wasn't necessarily where I'm like thinking, that is Batman through and through right there.
I thought it was funny, Snyder was
entertained by it.
Right. But it was a moment where Snyder was thinking, like, this is so cool.
Yeah. I mean, he's admitted that that scene was solely so they could see Batman and Joker together with him directing it. That was like his desire to put that in the movie, or to at least have that happen, you know, under his watch.
It just doesn't make sense.
It doesn't.
You want to, like, get into it, like,
shoehorned in.
The whole scene is useless and stupid, right? Like,
until part 3.
But we're not going down that road. Brian, what did you think of this stupid epilogue?
Well, first thing, did Mera have an accent early in the film that was gone by the end of the film?
No, it was still there. Does Mera have the British accent in the Aquaman movie?
I couldn't remember.
I don't think she does. Oh, by the way, since we want to talk to Aquaman, Willem Dafoe's hair in this Snyder Cut is ludicrous.
And honestly, I loved it. Like, it was so outrageous and ludicrous, like you were saying. But I was like, that's wonderful.
Oh, God, I can't even tell you what words he said in this movie, because I was just like, is his hair really down to his, like, nipples? Like, this is nuts. Okay, Brian, Mad Max Justice League. What'd you think?
Mad Max Justice League. No. There was all the way to the end when anti-life Superman appears. I didn't feel anything at all. There was no, oh shit, here we go. This is it. You know, there was nothing like that. It was okay. Evil Superman again. Okay. We saw that, you know, 5 hours ago. And Jared Leto, I guess I have to really question whether or not I actually appreciate him as an actor, because here I didn't get what he was doing. Was he trying to do a Heath Ledger? Was he trying to do his own thing? Was that actual dialogue that he was handed by someone, or was that him just going off? Yeah, the reach around line was silly.
It was very much a scripted line, because they had to film everything separately, so everything had to be mapped out to the T.
Right. You're absolutely right.
There was no improv.
That's very true. I just
it was very ledgery, though.
It was ledgery. I don't know. And
not
it's
in quality.
No.
She was still a fascinating. I mean, say what you will about his take on the Joker. It is terrible. Kind of, yeah, sure, but it is still thoroughly entertaining.
Oh, no. Okay. No. Couple of things. First of all, I remember getting this very strange feeling that the interaction between Batman and Joker in that scene, which, by the way, I actually, that is something I did appreciate. Like, I just like seeing those characters together. To that end, I got this very strange Lego Batman movie vibe between the two of them. Like, this feels like what I saw in that movie, and I love Lego Batman movie.
Great.
So in that sense, I guess there were parts of that I didn't really mind. And then I had to remind myself, wait a minute, no, I'm watching Jared Leto doing something with this character that could either be construed as genius or could be construed as complete insanity. I don't know. It had a very like drama club feel to it.
He was doing all the acting.
He was. Yes, he was. I don't know. Maybe I should change this and say that interaction was the best part of the movie, but it also
it is fascinating. Like, it's pointless.
Yeah.
But it's fascinating to watch.
So I'm just glad that we're not getting a whole movie of this.
Yeah.
Ever. Yeah. This whole like Batman's B team sort of thing. Like, oh my God. Like Deathstroke.
Yeah, be part three.
I know. Deathstroke looked silly. Mira was just like, Mira like did like a bump of coke and was just like, wah! And like, and Flash was silent. I can't tell you if he said anything.
Apparently he filmed that on the Fantastic Beasts set.
Yeah.
But
why he needed to be there at all.
He needed to be there so that he looked kind of sort of like the Vision that Batman's boring myself trying to explain it.
Really fast, really fast. I cannot pick out like most of the words that Jared Leto said, and yet yes. And yet I remember all of them. It's a very strange phenomenon that's the impression he left on me. I don't know. I'm gonna have to, now that I'm thinking about it, I'll have to watch that scene again, but I just don't want to, guys.
Say what you will about his Joker, it sticks with you.
It does.
I will say that much.
How different was it from Suicide Squad? Was it drastically different?
Very different. He in Suicide Squad, he's all kind of like, you know, mobster Scarface Joker.
Yeah.
Or Juggalo Joker. And in this, though, he's just like this weird, like, he's not even really the Joker. Oh, his laugh, by the way, that. God. Terrible.
See, even that, I'm fine with that. I don't care about that stuff. He's a fascinating actor, but
him alluding to giving Batman a reach around was not funny.
No, and there was no point to it.
It was weird. And I enjoy the fact that they finally talked about Batman like killing children, right? You know, because the truth of the matter is Batman endangers the lives of children on a regular basis and never gets called out on it except by the Joker. So I was very happy about that. Joker basically saying, like, look what you did. You killed children. And those children being Robin or whatever.
Yeah.
And but other than that, like, I couldn't care. I didn't feel, because we'd never seen them really interact hardly at all. I think a little bit in Suicide Squad in like an action scene. But there wasn't this whole, like, you know, moment where you're like, oh, two greats battling it out. Oh, what are they going to say? It was just, it just felt like meh.
Yeah, it needed it didn't make sense in the context of this movie.
Yeah, or that scene.
It was there.
Like, even Deathstroke's like, why the fuck is this guy here?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense. Other
Until
than
part three.
No, and other than
no,
Snyder's
until part and three.
No, Snyder was like, you know, it'd be cool, Batman and Joker teaming up in a post-apocalyptic world.
Hey, wait, did he say the "we live in a society" line?
No, he did not. And he didn't have like the Jesus crown or all those weird photos that have happened.
No Jesus Joker. I was let down by that. I wanted him just to wear a crown of thorns. No, he's already wearing a Gotham PD vest with like 14 badges, alluding that he just basically killed all these like police officers. Yeah, and Batman's makes like, okay, sense. Buddy.
Makes total sense.
Right. But it doesn't make sense that Batman's like, okay, let's have this guy near me.
Why is he on the team? Yeah, that doesn't make sense until part three.
Jesus, with this part three business.
Or okay. Should I say season three? Season three.
Okay. But believe it or not, that's not even the end of this movie. There is a whole other scene, which Mike alluded to at the beginning, with Martian Manhunter, which has – so this stupid nightmare scene, K-N-I-G-H-T, nightmare scene leads to Batman literally waking up from a nightmare to a green guy just floating into his house and saying like, hey, bro, I'm Martian Manhunter and I want to be part of your team.
And Batman something's says, coming.
And
something's
Batman says,
coming cool. In part two.
Yeah. And Batman says, cool. Awesome. You're a telepathic monster man that flies. But sure. I'll take your
and
word.
And I'm inexplicably skinnier so than I've ever been in any yep. of these movies.
Yep.
Yes.
And we bought the house from Ex Machina. It's yeah. real beautiful.
Yes.
But okay, so all of this Martian Manhunter thing segues into kind of my next topic. I want to talk about kind of the nerdy moments in this movie, because there's all kinds of Easter eggs. But Martian Manhunter is probably like the biggest. He's not even an Easter egg. He's a full-blown cameo at this point. Yeah. Mike, you already said you didn't like it, mainly because of the CGI, and it just felt completely out of place.
He didn't need to be there. He really didn't.
No. No, he didn't. It was Zack's, much like this whole movie, it's Zack Snyder flexing his muscles, spending yeah. that $70 million, and you know, more power to him. But Brian, what do you think of Martian Manhunter?
I mean, I could pick on his final line if you want me to, which was just plain bad. But
we gotta say it is literally, I wrote it down.
Yeah, what is it?
Some call me Martian Manhunter. Dot dot dot,
and literally credit. Bruce goes, okay, okay. And that's how it ends.
We have it,
and he flies off into the sunset again because it's not 2 o'clock in the afternoon; it's more like 5:30, mm-hmm. or maybe yeah. early dawn. Who knows?
It's always dusk,
or it's always early. Like kind of maybe night or day.
It's but always yes. darkest just before the dawn.
Oh, no,
that's what he should have said.
Mm-hmm. No, that was just that was so silly. Just,
here's what it is. Both of these scenes, the epilogue,
which epilogue?
Scene,
there's three.
The
of
nightmare,
them.
The nightmare scene, and the Martian Manhunter scene are what Marvel would do with after credit scenes or mid credit scenes. Or these
yes.
these are stretched out. Except you know that Martian Manhunter scene could really just be an after credit scene, and people would be fine with them being that. But because they're the end of the movie, they're the last note you're thinking about, it just leaves a sour taste in your mouth.
Mm-hmm. I just love how Batman in BVS was like, fucking aliens, we're humans, we gotta take care of ourselves. And then Martian Manhunter comes and is like, I'm a Martian and I'm a Manhunter, whatever that means.
He's learned from his mistakes.
And Batman's like, cool, bro, join our team. We bought
see,
a house.
That part doesn't bump up against me. That's fine. Yeah,
it's just weird. It's an innocuous sort of, like you said, just a after credits stinger. Doesn't mean anything. But yeah, exactly. It's the final image of this movie. And they really should have ended
such
it.
Such a question mark. Yeah, it's such a just like a what?
Yeah.
That's how you end it?
So another thing I wanted to point out, Crispus Allen, Detective Crispus Allen, finally gets his name mentioned. Did you guys catch this? No.
Oh, yeah. Doesn't
Gordon says it?
Gordon say it
at
yes,
Gotham PD in the Whedon cut. The guy's there. They have a conversation, but for some reason, Whedon cut out Gordon saying Crispus, which is silly. Like, why not throw that in there? But for those listening, Crispus Allen is a famous Gotham police department, a police detective who eventually dies and becomes a character called the Spectre. So
yeah, there was more than that. There was the Atom that was in there as
Ryan
well.
Ryan Choi, yes.
Yeah.
In a Nolan-esque moment at the end of the movie, you see this guy who's been working next to Cyborg's dad this whole movie, mm-hmm. and they hand him the keys to the lab, kind of literally, mm-hmm. and say like, oh, are you Ryan Choi? And he goes, looks to camera, yes, I'm Ryan Choi, aka Adam, in a movie yeah. I'll never
my friends call me Adam.
My yeah. friends call me Martian Manhunter.
But oh, yeah, that was kind of cool, I guess, in a you know, whatever sort of way. And there was a lantern, not a green lantern, but not the Green Lantern. So, you
what was that supposed to be?
What, it's
was
the same lantern Kilowog? From Whedon's version. No, it didn't look like okay. Kilowog. I don't know who it is. Mike, did you?
Couldn't tell you.
I yeah. Really it was just, you know, whatever. Just an ancient lantern.
It was a lantern.
But yeah, that was in the Whedon cut. One other thing I wanted to mention as far as little nitpicks or things that stood out to me, Ezra Miller's running.
Okay, yeah, here we go.
Can we talk about The Flash? Because I actually have some questions for Mike in a moment here.
Well, and before
I want to talk about the running, though. Oh, man, this will be fun.
Rodrigo Perez, our editor-in-chief, wrote the review of this, and I'm so glad he did because he mentioned it in his review, but it's so bad, I think we have to talk about it here as well. Ezra Miller looks like a little kid who is told to run in slow motion. Right? It doesn't, like, in a world where we have how many seasons of The Flash, Mike?
I think we're on seven.
Seven or eight. Yeah. The 100-something episodes of The Flash.
I got to say, I'm not fully invested anymore, but I'm still watching.
But even still, over 100 episodes of The Flash on CW on a fraction of the budget, and somehow that looks more convincing than every bit of Flash speed in this movie.
I don't know. It's pretty bad on there, too.
But come on, man.
Rodrigo, I would definitely say in the part where he's circling the whole Russian, you know, doomsday town or whatever it was.
The stronghold.
Yeah. It's definitely, he's just, you know, doing slow-mo running in real time. And you can tell because he has to talk during this.
Yeah.
And it's the most cringy dialogue you've ever heard in your fucking life. And here's the thing. That part was probably the most surprising part of the movie, where the convergence happens. It blows everything up and Barry Allen stops it. That I'm just like, fuck yeah, let's do this. And then he starts talking. And you're like, what? You're talking to your dad out loud and you're saying, I'm the best daddy. I'm the best of the best daddy. And you're just like running. And I'm like, can you just cut out the dialogue and keep what's happening? Because I'd be so on board with this if it's him like running back time and the way they visually kind of portray it. It's super cool. But then you add the dialogue and I'm fucking ready to throw my iPad across the fucking room because this is the most awful, terrible dialogue I've ever seen acted out in any superhero movie in a long time.
Yeah. So, we don't get Barry Allen in this movie until 70 minutes in.
That's true.
Absolutely bonkers. And when he is on screen, Ezra Miller in the dialogue is like this breath of fresh air. He has like fun dialogue. He makes fun jokes. A lot of the jokes that I assumed Whedon wrote were actually Snyder jokes, like we said. And then he uses his powers. And at first, there's the scene with Iris West.
Yeah.
And that seems actually really sweet and cool. Yeah. Well, no, I didn't like the hot dog thing. The hot dog thing was silly.
I thought that was the best part.
No, but I like how we've seen super speed in a number of different things nowadays, but the way Snyder treats it's actually kind of cool in the sense that Flash has to be so dainty with his movements. Like he can't just full on touch somebody because he'll like knock him through a wall. So he has to like poke him a little bit, you know? Yeah.
He has to be very, very gentle with Iris.
And it's very gentle. And Ezra Miller does almost like a dance where it's super gentle and flowy. But when it comes down to him saying, like, I got to run as the approach the speed of light, it looks so stupid that it suddenly undercuts everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, Brian, you had thoughts about The Flash?
Well, okay. Yeah, the running. I mean, I just thought he looked like he was skiing or something.
Rodrigo compared it to swimming.
Swimming.
It does look like he's swimming through, you know.
Yeah.
Which I think that was a conscious decision. I just think it was the wrong decision.
It looks silly. Yeah. Somebody should have been like, come on.
There are so many things. Like that first scene of him going to his job interview and what are his first lines? He's basically muttering and talking to random people saying, I'm late. I'm late. And it's like, it's very odd. Yeah. And it's almost I don't know.
If I think you're making things up.
Andy's a total creep. Staring at I mean Iris West, beautiful woman, Kiersey Clemons, but he stares at her hard.
He does.
Like daggers through her, like to the point where she should have called the cops.
But she was staring right back, motherfucker.
Probably thinking like, who is this kid? He is weird.
I guess my question here is, okay, we've seen several on-screen flashes going back to the original series. When was that? The late 80s, I believe.
John Wesley Shipp, 1990. Early 90s.
1991 or something?
1990.
Oh, 1990.
I believe these portrayals by John Wesley Shipp, Grant Gustin, Ezra Miller, to be very different. Do any of them slightly capture, Mike, the vibe of The Flash that you have loved? Or, and I'm talking about his personality. I mean, what do you think?
I think the closest one that got, the one that got closest to his actual personality was that early 90s Flash.
Wow. They're all Wally West, aren't they?
The early 90s one was not.
No, but I'm saying
the rest of them very much are more lighthearted and Wally-esque. Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. That's what I was curious about, because I didn't really enjoy the Peter Parker-ness of it. Yeah, it was a breath of fresh air. There's no denying that. I still do kind of enjoy those scenes in his hideout. Those are okay when he first meets Batman and everything. But here's the other question. So with the way super speed is portrayed in this film, maybe on screen in general, I don't know. There's two perspectives. So from perspective A, what we're seeing is somebody who can, they're in one spot and then the next moment they're in another spot very far away. It's mm-hmm. just like, it's like they're teleporting. From the perspective
with lightning.
Of, yes. From the perspective of the speedster, it's basically they're moving normally, but everything is slowed down to the point where it's frozen. So I guess that's where I'm confused. Why then is he also running? Is he doing that? Is he doing that because that is what's going to activate the speed force and eventually cause him to travel through time? Or I don't know. I guess when I see him doing his air swimming skiing routine, that's where I'm confused. Does that even need to be happening? Because honestly, the part that I thought was the closest to how I felt it should look was that opening scene, which I didn't like. I did not like that opening scene of The Flash saving Irish, because it was just, it was so dumb. And the music choice there was just, it felt like that scene was
the first time,
movie.
Yeah. The first time I watched that scene, I was kind of like knocked back by the musical choices. Same with most of this movie.
Yeah.
Should I just say he's a big Nick Cave fan and you're going to get all the Nick Cave.
But can we also say that the Whedon version, the Danny Elfman music is so silly.
It is. And the needle drops are just so commercial. They're like, okay, we need a light rock and roll. We need, and then, you know, just playing those two scenes side by side is hilarious, by the way. If you've never done that, when this drops on HBO Max, play the Whedon version where Aquaman is storming out to Jack White, and then play the Nick Cave version and laugh your fucking ass off, because it is hilarious.
Such different vibes, too. Like Snyder maybe wanted it to be more emotional.
Yeah.
And Whedon saw the same scene and was like, no, this is kind of his badass rock star vibe.
Yep.
Very weird. But then
there's the scene where people are singing Aquaman away fucking reason.
Oh God.
They worship
what
him.
Is that?
Why is that in the movie? And then she smells his sweater.
Yeah. I wrote that in my notes.
She smells his sweater. That's right.
Why does she smell his sweater?
What?
It's all sweaty Jason Momoa sweater. Like, maybe I just answered my question, but like
that was another level of this movie. There are levels that you can enjoy as like a superhero fan, but there are other levels where you're like, you're outside of it and you're like, this is the most dumb, hilarious shit I've ever seen. And you can appreciate a lot of the movie on that level.
So as I said earlier, Snyder does consider these people gods, like clearly, but I am so sick of the god imagery. The Aquaman worshippers, the Superman Jesus stuff. Superman still does one of the Jesus poses a couple times, actually, in this movie. Like, it's just, I'm so over it. This god stuff.
I expected that stuff. So I'm not necessarily for or against. He does lay it on pretty hard, but that's not the stuff that's going to bother me.
Yeah. So really quick, I mean, getting back to the running and the speed stuff, do you think that, like, because that's always been the superpower that I just am still waiting to see it portrayed really, really cool on screen. To be completely honest with you guys, I think the only movie that's gotten it like as close to how I want it to look as possible is Sonic the Hedgehog.
Sonic the Hedgehog.
That's the only one. I just want to know, like, from both your perspectives, from a huge Flash fan and Charles as well, you know, having grown up with these characters, do you think that how the Flash is represented in this movie and just in general from what I assume we'll see in the Flash solo film, if this works? I don't know.
in my eyes, I always pictured it kind of like a treadmill, right? Like once you get running, you have to keep running to keep that speed or you're just, it's all going to topple, right? But then like the X-Men movies, maybe they were not the first to show it this way, but the Quicksilver scenes where time just stopped kind of went to like the default on like how this is how it is. And those just don't even make sense too, because Quicksilver is able to play music at a certain speed, but then time around him is stopped. It just doesn't make sense. So that stuff really bothered
perhaps me. Perhaps that he makes a field around him. I don't know. I'm just trying to give them something.
So in this movie, he does a decent job where Flash, right before he's about to do anything, there's like a crackle and maybe like one stray lightning bolt, as if he's like tapping into the Speed Force kind of like subconsciously. Yeah. And then I guess you can assume that he stops time and he can just walk where he needs to go, even though that would just be like the worst superpower, right?
Right, it's like, the least exciting to watch.
Well, not just that, but like also say you're the Flash, isn't the coolest part getting places super fast? But if it's only perceived as fast by regular people and you still have to go through the drudgery of going a mile or 2 miles or however long it just takes you, like, you know, a million times longer, that just would be terrible power. That'd be like hell.
That's what I mean. There's one moment when during the first big battle, it probably takes place right after that removed dialogue between Batman and the Flash that we all liked. It's the moment where the Flash just zips really quickly in like in a door frame. I remember that little moment. He's facing off against a parademon and he's just blasting back and forth really quick. And I remember thinking that actually looks pretty cool.
You just don't want to be in their perspective is what you're saying.
I
want to see it from a viewer's perspective.
I don't. And then because then a moment later, we see him running around the circumference of that circular, you know, room. Also in that same scene, he touches Diana Prince's sword, sends it back to her. I still feel like when he touched the sword, I thought he was going to go boop, like it just he was going to make a little noise. But
I will say in the Whedon cut actually makes more sense.
It does.
Why he's hitting that sword back.
Yeah. There's a whole scene where she needs that sword to cut a guy in half as they fall.
Mm-hmm. And in this one, she's just getting
thanks
her sword.
For my sword. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And Flash is like, cool, I can run fast and get you that sword.
Exactly.
And then trip. Yeah.
So would you like a 16-hour version of this movie, Brian, where we have to watch him in real time run around the stronghold 45 times to reach the speed of light, where he's just like huffing and puffing, like and eventually he reaches it, and then to everybody else it takes about like what, a quarter of a second?
As funny as I think that would be, no, I don't know what I want. That's the problem here, because I've always thought the Flash is probably the most fascinating character for a variety of reasons. And I just feel like maybe it boils down to the actor. Maybe it boils down to the choices Snyder has made here. I don't know, but I feel like they're blowing it. And it does not make me excited for this Flash movie in the slightest, except for Michael Keaton. I don't know.
I think in my eyes, and Mike, you are the Flash fan, but in my eyes, the best use of super speed in a relatively recent like superhero project is Quicksilver and Age of Ultron, because they don't really do that whole stop time thing. He's just really fast.
Yes, exactly.
I didn't necessarily like the special effect of it all, how it looked.
Well, he didn't look fast.
Yeah, it looked just the special effects didn't look good to me. It looked strange and off. Oh, so I was never satisfied with Quicksilver. But yeah, they've kind of painted him. They've painted this new movie into a corner, in that I don't know how far Andy Muschietti can take it away from what they've currently established. Maybe they're just letting him do whatever he wants, or maybe he's stuck with, you know, air swimming with lightning.
Why does the Flash get into a Olympic sprinter pose right before the whole scene where the moment where Superman turns and looks at him in slow motion? Why is he getting into that really stupid, like he touches the ground and then takes off? Like it doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah.
That's just totally a stylistic choice.
That's a Zack Snyder because it looks cool choice.
Anyways, I don't know.
I will say though, the best use of the speed in the sense of like slowing everything down is when you realize that Superman is just as fast and Superman just looks over at him. That's really so fucking cool.
But that's the problem is we saw all the really cool scenes already, except for maybe a handful here or there. And that's probably why a lot of people are having some issues or are going to have some issues with this movie. It's because we've seen it. It's just a longer version.
Yeah.
So
and so that segues into my final topic here. I think we have to discuss the quote unquote discourse surrounding this film, right?
Yeah.
Because the truth is, this just isn't a typical superhero film. This is the final product of a social media campaign that got a lot of attention because of the tactics that were used. Basically, for those that don't know, the hashtag release the Snyder Cut people, not all of them, a lot of them were just fans that were like super enthusiastic and did some suicide prevention fundraisers and whatnot.
Zack Snyder just wanted a better fucking movie.
But Zack Snyder is quick to point to those. But there were also some not so great people. And those people would, you know, they would announce Warner Brothers would announce a random movie, like a kid's movie. And you would get like a million subtweets of people saying, release a fucking Snyder Cut, you know? And it was just like, whoa, buddy, you know? And eventually it worked, right? Like WB finally backed down. They got this movie. Great. So now that it's all over, the film's released, was it worth it? Like, are these people going to be happy? You have to assume they will, but.
Oh, they're going to be thrilled, dude.
Yeah.
Have you heard the reaction so far from the Snyder fans that have seen it? It's praise beyond praise.
And
I'm interested more not to hear how they feel this week. I'm more interested in how the sentiment is or where the sentiment is next year or 2 years from now when people can soberly look at this film as what it is. So that's more what I want to get to is when people can and not be so reverent about it.
Is that ever going to come?
Sure.
We still have people arguing over Last Jedi. So, like, I just don't think there will ever be a time where the discourse surrounding the Snyder Cut, quote unquote, is going to be.
Extremes are always going to be there. Yes.
Yeah. I just think that it's. I don't know. I think the people that have the blinders on are going to love this, right? No matter what, they're in the bag for it before this movie even came out, right? I just wonder for those fans who are like, I just want to see Zack Snyder's uncut version of this. And then to see that it was basically a longer Snyder, Joss Whedon cut that's darker. Like, I don't know. I personally, you know, I'm happy that Snyder got to do his movie. I just don't know that it was needed. Like, obviously not necessary, but like, even I don't think that it was worth this 4 years of hype.
See, that's where we are probably going to really disagree. Because I'm very glad it exists, because there is obviously a very big portion of the fandom that wants to see it and is going to love it. So good. They get their thing. Great. They get to obsess over it. Some of those toxic people that were dicks to everybody, they also get their thing, which is less cool. But, you know, I'm glad that there are people who are passionate and nice that just wanted to see the rest of Zack's story, that they finally get to see it. And it is a Zack Snyder movie, whether you like it or not. So if you like Zack Snyder, then you're probably going to like this movie. So great. It exists. It's for you. If you don't like it, watch something else.
Well, yeah, obviously. I just wonder if there's going to be any contingency of his fans that think like, oh, well, that's it.
Probably not people that are out and out Snyder fans. Yeah. I think anyone who's a Zack Snyder fan is going to love this.
Fair enough. Brian, any thoughts about, like, you know, whether this was worth it or the Snyder Cut,
release
the Snyder Cut?
Worth it in the sense that, yeah, Mike, you hit the nail on the head with, you know, those who are going to appreciate it and those who, you know, who might not. I think it's worth it in the sense that I guess the hope here is that as happy as I am that Zack Snyder got this as a gift, you know, for I guess largely for himself, but also the fans. I also hope that this will lead to other instances of this. This is such a unique situation of seeing this movie resurrected in a way I could have never imagined. That
it's definitely the most high profile like version of this that
it really is. And I just think about all of those films that were rushed out or films that were, you know, unfinished that received a theatrical release or movies that maybe portions exist on some dusty old shelf somewhere that All of us would love
like
to see
a David Ayer Suicide Squad or other DC properties.
Do you really want to watch movies you've already seen from years ago that weren't good to begin with?
I would rather see a director's full, like, their stamp of approval. This is what I wanted the movie to be than to just be the chopped up, you know, here's what the movie by committee is.
100%. So here's the thing. I think that in a better situation would have been WB gives Zack Snyder $70 million and says, make whatever the hell you want. Right. I would rather see a new Zack Snyder movie for $70 million than.
Well, you're going to see that on Netflix.
Well, no, but that's a whole separate thing. I'm saying I wish that money would have been put towards something else. I don't want to see another Justice League.
You are in the minority of like superhero fandom, though.
Well, yeah,
this is great fucking press for HBO Max, and this is great for their numbers. So
absolutely.
You
guys are telling me you would much rather see, or not much rather, but you'd happily watch a 2.5 hour, 3 hour David Ayer cut of Suicide Squad in 2021 or 2022?
Sure.
Why?
I would do
because
it.
Because I'm just interested to see what he had in mind. I hated the Suicide Squad, but I'd much rather see his version than whatever we got.
But wouldn't you rather, like, we're James Gunn's redoing it, you know? Like, James Gunn's going to give us Suicide Squad. Like,
I want to see that too.
Right, but I'm just saying I would rather the effort be put towards different types of movies or more superhero movies or, you know, let David Ayer, you know, do something else. We don't need – my next question was going to be for you guys, did WB open up a can of worms doing this? And I do think they did because of the Ayer cut thing, right? So, like, immediately after the Snyder Cut was announced, hashtag release the Ayer cut started trending because these people were obsessed with, like, well, now that we got them to do this, we're going to get them to do whatever else we want. And and I think that's terrible. Just because you don't like a movie, just because a director has a shitty circumstance, doesn't mean that we need to go back in time and give them whatever to make a movie. I know that might be like kind of a cynical hot take, but like,
well, the root of the problem is WB is meddling too much in these big movies. And yes, they are putting a lot of money into them. But if they're trusting these creators to come in with a very specific voice, don't water down their voice. Let them release what it's better in its purest form than it is with you chopping it up and trying to make it for a general audience.
So I don't believe that. And I'll tell you why with the Snyder Cut in mind. This 4 hour cut of Zack Snyder's Justice League would not exist.
Oh no, it wouldn't have played in 2017. They would have released probably like a 3 hour. Which I would have preferred.
What now?
I said they would have probably released like a 3 hour version, which I would have preferred.
They were saying they kept asking him to cut it down.
Well, let's say until he would have fought for it and they got to like 3 hours or 2.5 hours.
This wouldn't have been a good movie, is all I'm saying.
Have been a more concise movie. There would have been less indulgence to it.
It would have been less of a movie, yes. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that this would have been a good movie. I don't think it would have been drastically better than Whedon's version of the movie. Like I said before, I think Whedon did about as good as you could do turning this four-hour behemoth into a relatively, you know, short two-hour movie. Mm-hmm. Adding 20-30 more minutes of Snyderness isn't going to change that, right?
It makes it unique and kind of a fascinating watch, which is why I can't discredit it completely because it's wholly its own thing.
Well, yes, but I'm just saying that all I'm saying is every time a studio does wrong by a director, which happens a lot,
yes,
we cannot expect for the studio then to just say, okay, our bad, let's do this. Especially when we're talking about franchise movies where we've already moved on. So I would rather just, you know, I don't need to see this is what I'm saying. I don't want to see.
That's just you though. That's what I'm saying. There's a large audience out there. That'll take as whatever you give them. There's plenty of room for content. There's plenty of, you know, platforms that are hungry for it. So why not? Because there's a large audience for it.
So you want WB just to like look on Twitter and say like, what do you guys want? And then here's $20 million.
As long as it's not taking away from what they're also doing, adding to HBO Max, then go for it. Yeah,
that $70 million that went to the Snyder Cut would have been used elsewhere, right?
theoretically. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Funded 7 TV shows. It could have funded, you know, 2 mid-budget movies.
Or was it ABC, AT&T just saying, all right, here's the fucking money. I'm just saying is just because you don't want it doesn't mean there's not a lot of people that don't want it.
I'm not speaking for the entirety of the world. All I'm saying is that I believe that this was a completely unnecessary thing that was ultimately, when you look at what you were given, looks to me like a waste of time. And that sounds harsh, and you know, good on you, Snyder, for being able to release a 4-hour movie. That's awesome. But it wasn't necessary, and I don't see this big injustice. Having now seen what this movie is now in its 4-hour version and what Whedon turned it into 2-hour version, I don't see the big difference here. And I think
there's a big difference. I think we've established that much.
Okay. I don't think so. I really don't.
I have to agree with Charles on this one. I don't see the big difference. It's still neat that this happened, but I don't see, this is not a hugely different film. I don't know. Go on, Charles.
Well, yeah.
No, the bones of the movie are the same. Yeah. Absolutely. They both tried to make the same movie, but they're very, very different versions of it. And I think it's a fascinating kind of way to look at something. That's why I'm glad that it exists. You get to see two completely different people's ideas of what a movie should be.
That is a good point. That is a very good point. How often do you see that?
Exactly. We don't need to democratize everything, right?
No, like, but it's fun.
At the end of the day, this
makes this company a lot of fucking money.
Right.
So that's why it's going to keep happening.
So Zack Snyder, you know, he gets to release his version, but the same people who are assholes to him are the same people that are profiting from this now. So all I'm getting at here is I really think that WB shot themselves in the foot by allowing this to happen. I don't know that we needed it, again, because a 2-hour version or a 2-hour and 30-minute version of this movie that we would have gotten in 2017 from Zack Snyder is not all that different than the movie that we actually got from Joss Whedon. And I don't know that there was this big injustice that, you know, artistic integrity was on the line sort of thing with Zack Snyder. Am I glad that he got the money to do it? Sure. Whatever. It's not my money. I don't care. But I really don't want to sit here, and maybe it's me because I have to work in this field and write about these movies day in and day out. I am so sick of talking about these movies from 2017 and 2016 as if they're relevant now. Like, I don't care about David Ayer's Suicide Squad in 2021. I'm over it. I don't want to see more Jared Leto Joker. I'm done with it.
Like, I really don't care about David Ayer's Suicide Squad either. But if they threw it out there, I would watch it.
Well, see, I wouldn't. I really wouldn't. And that's fine. But I'm just saying.
The thing is, you would.
Well, if I have to talk about it, but I really wouldn't. Like, I watched Suicide Squad, like all these movies, I watched it once in the theaters and never again. And yeah. And so that's whatever. Like, I would rather our effort as fans of superheroes, because I am a fan of superheroes, I just wish these guys would use their perceived power to focus on and trying to promote like original content that isn't, you know, 4-year-old movies that were never good to begin with. You know, well, that's all I'm
saying on that. They're just years away from actually getting any actual superhero content onto HBO Max outside of like Peacemaker. So I think this was their way of kind of having something in that in between time. And they had to spend a lot of money to do it and appease a fan group that was part toxic because of it. But I'm still glad it exists just because it's a really fascinating thing to see.
With that said, we talked about it before. Brian, you didn't really chime in. Do you think this is actually going to lead to anything more with Snyder's Snyderverse?
Part 2 and 3.
No. It's funny when I see people like, you know, talking about like, oh, the plans are in place, Justice League 2 and 3, and you know, all this other malarkey. No, this is the end. We've reached the end of this, and I'm going to call it an experiment because yeah, I don't wish to see anything else with this aesthetic, with this vibe. I mean, this is my personal preference here, but I feel like if I was the parent, you know, and I'm giving this movie to the fans who are my children, I would say, okay, here, there you go. You got it. Now let's never talk about this again. I mean, that's the way I feel. I'm glad it exists. I'm happy for Snyder. I hope it, yeah, like we just talked about, I hope it leads to other similar projects being resurrected. I'm still waiting for that 2015 Fantastic Four version with
See, that's what I'm saying, man. Saying, like, do you really want that?
Yes.
I'll watch it.
Have potential. There are so many films that are just screaming with potential that I know could benefit from something like this.
There will never be a resurrected Fantastic Four.
No.
There will never be a resurrected Fantastic Four. I know. But am I happy that it's here? Yeah, I am happy it's here. Am I happy I watched it? I mean, I watched it, but I can't say I was very happy doing it. We need to bring this to an end. We need to focus on the standalone DC films, which, I mean, guys, the Batman, that could be a remarkable film. But as far as what Snyder's done, we need to definitively close the book on this. We got what you wanted. Let's just move on to something else.
But now they want more.
Yeah.
You'll get more. It's just not going to be the same. It's going to be, yeah, Suicide Squad and these little films with tiny, tiny little ties to the greater universe. And hopefully by the time Black Adam wraps, if that one ever sees the light of day, maybe then someone will finally say, okay, let's finally be done with this. I mean, seriously, this is silly. this has failed. They have done severe injustice to, personally, characters that I grew up with. I wasn't a big Marvel guy growing up, and I have, with the culmination being Justice League, as pleased as I am for Snyder, they've screwed up. They screwed up what these characters could be. If anything, Superman and Lois is a better example of what Superman could be. I mean, come on.
No, but I love that. That's great.
A whole other discussion there. Happy it's here, but we need to be done now.
I think that's the thing. There's room for all kinds of content. Are they course correcting? Very clearly, yes. I'm interested to see where that goes. But that's not to say that we've seen the last of this Snyderverse, just because I will never say never with these guys. It's also not to say that I really am clamoring to see it. Like, I'm fine if this is the end of it. I'd much rather have them use Flashpoint as like a course correction, as long as it's its own story and has.
Is that
like
the plan? Are they planning to do that?
It's pretty obvious.
Okay.
I just think that they're going to just have fun with the multiverse and pick and choose what they want to keep.
Good. Yep. And that's fine. That's totally good. As long as we get people that are better suited to the characters at the helm. Yeah.
Or we're getting Ezra Miller.
Do you think Ezra Miller will erase himself?
See, I like Ezra Miller as an actor. I just don't like some of his choices that he's making here. So maybe I'm hoping under another director it'll be better, but I don't know.
Well, Chapter 2 didn't really sell me on the director, so.
Oof. Yeah.
Well, that's a podcast for another time. I think we can close the book on this podcast and move on and never talk about Justice League ever again.
Until part 2 and 3.
Yes. Honestly,
I keep saying it.
I know. Honestly, I really think that the popularity of this will lead to an animated movie, and I'm okay with that.
I'm surprised that they turned down the comic version.
Yeah. Turned down the prequel comic.
Okay. All right. Well, hopefully they get the continuance in a comic book, because I know they're doing that for the Batman 89 universe.
Yeah.
Hopefully
they
can do that.
Oh,
with
yeah.
It.
And because all of this comes back to RoboCop, they did that with the original script for RoboCop 2. They turned that into a comic, which is really, really good.
I didn't know that.
Just stop by. I'll let you borrow it, Brian. I wouldn't say it's great or drastically better, but it is very different for sure.
And that's what you could say about the Snyder Cut.
Right. Right. I just, you know. Yeah, we're not going to go down there.
I wouldn't say it's great or drastically better, but I'm glad it's there.
I'm not even. Yeah. Sorry. We literally could talk in circles for 4 hours about this. But as long as this discussion has gone on, just want to remind people, if you were to start this podcast and then pause it at this moment in time and look at what's on the Snyder Cut right now, you would have just probably, let me look at my timestamps here, you would have gotten to the first scene of Batman in a suit. That's how long that movie is. At about 2 hours. A little less than 2 hours, you finally get to see Batman in his suit. Yeah. So
I think we can all agree it's far too long. Yes.
Yeah. Way too long. And with that, I want to thank you guys for enduring with me. Mike, I will not thank you for watching that movie twice. I don't know what possessed you to do that.
I might watch it again. I'm kind of fascinated.
That
by
is
it.
12 hours of your life, Mike.
But I've done it in chopped up pieces.
Yeah. Okay. No. There's just, you know, watch Banshee again. You got me all on Banshee lately.
Yeah.
Banshee's watch Banshee great. Again. Don't do this. Watch Homelander kick butt. Yeah. Okay. All right, guys. Thank you for joining me. And next week, I promise listeners, it'll be not nearly as long and we'll talk nothing about superheroes. So enjoy.
Not if I have anything to do with it.
I know. Right. All right, guys. Thanks.
Bye. Oh, boy.